Hi, I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and this is Toxic Free Talk Radio, where we talk about how to thrive in a toxic world, because there are toxic chemicals out there, and the more we know about them, the more we can recognize them, and the more we know that there are safe alternatives, the more we can protect ourselves and our families and all our loved ones, our friends, and the planet. From the health effects, the emotional effects, the mental effects, the spiritual effects of these toxic chemicals. And so what we talk about on this show is getting to know these toxic chemicals so that we can eliminate them from our lives and make healthier choices. Today we're going to talk about plastic. We're going to talk about plastic and how it affects our health, but also how we can live lives without plastic. But before we do, I just want to read you a quote. And I've mentioned before that every morning I send out quotes. You can go to my website, toxicfreetalkradio.com, and sign up in the newsletter sign-up box, and then it'll take you to a page where you can choose words of wisdom, and you'll get a quote from me every morning, such as this one. And this is from James Allen. And though you might not recognize the name, you will probably recognize the title of his most famous book, As a Man Thinketh, which has been just universally known ever since it was published in 1902. He was a British philosopher and writer, and many, many people have read this book. And he says, "The greatest achievement was at first and for a time a dream. The oak sleeps in the acorn. The bird waits in the egg. Dreams are the seedlings of realities." And what we're doing here with talking about toxics is that we are being the acorn, we are being the egg, we are being the seed of something to come. And as we make these choices and create a non-toxic world together, a toxic-free world, then it comes into being. And that's why this is so important. My guest today is Jay Sinha. He's the co-founder and co-owner with his wife, Chantal Plamondon, of Life Without Plastic, a one-stop shop and information resource for high-quality, ethically sourced, earth-friendly alternatives to plastic products for everyday life. Thanks for joining me, Jay.
Well, thank you, Deborah. It's a real privilege and a pleasure to be here to chat with you.
Thank you. I'm so impressed with your website because not only are you selling things that aren't plastic, but you're also paying attention to the quality of those things and choosing very high quality products, not things that are going to break or, you know, just junk, that you're really looking at other aspects of it as well as them not being plastic. Tell me how you got interested in this subject.
Well, it goes back a ways. Both Chantal and I have always been pretty environmentally oriented. Even going back as far as when I was about 11 years old, I remember doing a project on acid rain, and I was really passionate about that. But for us, it really began around 2002. We were living in a home that had some pretty serious mold issues, and I happened to be also working in a building that had mold issues. And both Chantal and I became quite sick. We were able to leave the sources of the problem, the mold, but we both became quite sick for about a year. And this caused us to become more sensitive to environmental irritants and things like perfume, cigarette smoke, and certainly molds and mildews. Mm-hmm. So we began looking for ways to remove toxins from our everyday life. And in that same year as well, our son was born. So we certainly wanted to minimize his exposure to toxins.
Yes.
Yeah. And we read an article in Mothering Magazine during that period about plastic toxicity and the risks for children. And that was a bit of a light bulb flash for us and got us thinking about all the plastics around us, bottles, Tupperware containers we were using. So we began looking for a stainless steel water bottle. And this was, you know, 2002, 2003. There weren't many out there at all. And we had a really hard time finding one.
Not at the time, yeah.
No, we did find one online, ordered it, tried it out, liked it. And we were also looking for glass baby bottles to store Chantal's breast milk for when we would be going out or traveling. And they were, you know, the norm back in the 50s, 60s, even early 70s. But we couldn't find them anywhere. So, we did find one supplier eventually And we contacted them, and they said, sure, you can buy some, but the minimum order is 1,000 because they only did wholesale. And so that kind of got us thinking. We were both feeling rather disillusioned by our jobs at the time and looking for more meaning and more impact in our work and how we were spending our time. And so that's really how the company began, with stainless steel water bottles, glass baby bottles, and then some stainless steel food containers as well. Chantal began it full-time. She had taken time off when our son was born. And then a couple of years later, I also left my job and began working full-time on the company. And just as it went on, we added more products and focused on things that were hard to find in a non-plastic form.
Yeah, there are a lot of things that are hard to find. So what did you, what are some of the things that you think are most difficult? I know that I've been living without plastic for about 30 years, also from my own chemical sensitivities many, many years ago. And I found that once I understood plastic and what was going on with it, that I didn't want to have it. I wanted to eliminate it as much as I could. And I can't, I think that it's unrealistic to think that one could eliminate 100% of plastic. I know I haven't been able to do it and still live in a modern technological world, but I find that there's so many things that I can replace that I don't have to use plastic for. So give us some examples of some of the early things that you were wanting to replace after the bottles, and what was your success or lack thereof of finding those items?
Well, you're absolutely right about the difficulty of removing everything. That's quite overwhelming when you begin looking at it. So we began with a focus on food and drink and trying to remove all plastic from coming into contact with what we would put into our bodies, essentially. So there's the bottles I mentioned, but also stainless steel food containers we began using more, and just non-plastic dishes of any sort. We've used glass, ceramic, wood. For storing food, for example, leftovers, we use stainless steel containers or glass containers, which are relatively easy to find.
Yeah, they are.
Some of them do have plastic lids, but you can certainly arrange it so the plastic doesn't touch the food. Another one was, bags. For example, we reusable bags now are everywhere, but we began using just cotton bags, which were relatively easy to find as well. Those were the main things, like utensils as well. Stainless steel utensils are everywhere. That's one that really didn't require much effort for us.
Would you say that, I think for me, it was just becoming aware of what was plastic in my environment.
Absolutely.
Because I think that a lot of people can't recognize plastic. They just don't know what to look for. And
right.
So when I, it really is kind of amazing. I remember back 30 years ago when I first started asking myself these questions, it wasn't in my awareness. So people don't walk around thinking this is cotton, this is plastic, this is wood, And it's not an issue unless you're trying to evaluate the safety of all those materials, actually.
Absolutely, and it wasn't an issue for us either. I mean, we were using plastic quite regularly until all this happened and made us look at our whole lives. And then when we began looking at the plastics around us, there was so much. And personal care products, shampoos, soaps tended to come in plastic bottles, so we shifted more to bar soaps, that sort of thing. Or bulk, like buying in bulk is an amazing way to avoid plastic. You can bring your own containers. Now, back then, it was very, very out of the ordinary. Now it's becoming a little more accepted and even more mainstream to bring your containers to a bulk store, have it weighed, teared beforehand, and then fill it with whatever you're buying. And there are more and more places that offer natural, non-toxic alternatives to preservative-laden personal care products. So that was another big one that we switched to.
Well, we'll talk more about this after the break.
Okay.
Especially after the break, we're going to talk about the dangers of plastic. Like, why would you want to stay away from plastic in addition to the obvious environmental things that of the toxicity and not biodegrading, but the human toxicity of plastic. Why in our homes would we not want to do that? And you're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and we're here today with my guest, Jay Sinha of Life Without Plastic. And you can find Life Without Plastic at DeborahLissDot.com. Or you can go to his website directly at lifewithoutplastic.com. This is Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and we're here today with Jay Sinha from Life Without Plastic, talking about how we can live without plastic. Jay, I want to let you talk about why plastics are dangerous, and I know you have some stories of how people have been affected by that. But first I want to say, just as kind of a background, that there are many types of plastics, that they vary in toxicity, and that it's difficult to identify some types of plastics, and that we should just be, in general, watching out for plastics. That I don't spend so much time saying, is this a 5 or a 3, or what kind of plastic is it, or how can I identify it? I just, across the boards, eliminate as much plastic as possible.
I totally agree, and that's very much the approach we take as well, a basic precautionary approach just to avoid plastics. I mean, plastics are really a chemical soup. They are petroleum-based or natural gas or coal, so they're coming from fossil fuels at their base. And I know you interviewed Beth Terry, and I heard you talking quite a bit about the environmental aspects there. It was a great interview, so I won't talk too much about that, but I mean, those are very energy-intensive and earth-scarring extraction processes used to just get the base material to make plastics, and then all the waste issues as well. But in terms of the health, you may have a base plastic polymer, but a lot of additives are added to the actual plastic to provide certain certain qualities, such as softness, rigidity, durability. It could be things like actual softeners, which are usually phthalates, flame retardants. And as you say, the toxicity is going to vary from plastic to plastic. I know you also interviewed Mike Shade about PVC, and that's certainly probably the worst out there. It's just phenomenal that it is still a consumer product. But, I mean, to give that example, PVC contain up to about 55% of plasticizing additives by weight.
And these are usually phthalates.
And lead,
too. Lead.
Yeah,
and you
absolutely.
Can just touch it
absolutely.
And get lead in your body just from touching PVC.
And these are it's still being used to make things like toys. But so these are obviously hugely disruptive to the body and especially to developing systems, so children, pregnant women. But in terms of, you know, some of the effects on actual people, we're in a unique situation this way because we often get or are contacted by people who share their experiences with us about their experiences with plastic. And I really believe we're just at the beginning to see the tip of the iceberg of effects of plastics on people. What we're finding are there are more and more people out there suffering from allergies to plastics with varying levels of severity. To give you a few examples, it could be something as simple as someone getting a numbness in their mouth or even a sore throat from drinking water that's been in plastic. We've heard of that a number of times. An interesting one, a pianist wrote to us, and he explained the importance of tactile memory in the fingers when playing the piano, especially for difficult pieces that require a lot of concentration.
I play the piano.
Do you? I do as well. Not well, but try. But he found, interestingly, when he would be playing a piece and he may stop to look something up on a keyboard, his plastic computer keyboard, the computer keyboard seemed to have a detrimental effect on his tactile memory, and he described it almost as jamming his radar, as he put it, because once he touched the plastic keys, it seemed to erase his tactile memory and make it sort of inaccessible for a while, so it would take him a while to get back into the piece more than if he had stopped and done something else as opposed to working on the computer and went back to playing the piece. So he was wondering if there could be a link from certain plastics, plastics contributing to, you know, something like ADD or a general lack of concentration, an idea?
Well, I think that one of the things that I found when I was writing my book, Toxic Free, is that I had looked up, you know, I started researching this so long ago that I looked up while I was writing the book, about the health effects of, you know, could we find toxic chemicals that contributed to health problems of all kinds? And what I actually found was that every single body system is affected by toxic chemicals. That you can actually look up online any body system and find toxic chemicals that contribute to damaging that body system. Everything from our DNA to our skin to nervous system, kidneys, liver, everything. Everything, our brains. And the nervous system is very, very sensitive to toxic chemicals. And any kind of neurological problem where you're having like sensory touch in your fingers, that would be neurological. The communication between your fingers and your brain would be neurological, you know, all these things. And so that, it seems very likely to me. And as a pianist who grew up playing on ivory keys on a real piano, it's very different for me when I feel those plastic keys.
Well, and what you've just described fits exactly with some of the other anecdotes we've heard from people. There's a lady who came to us looking for a non-plastic toothbrush. She's highly allergic to plastics, and she said that the last toothbrush she tried had some plastic in it and caused her to go into anaphylactic shock, required an epi injection, a preservative-free one. And after years of searching and consulting tons of doctors, she's been able to diagnose her particular condition as a rare genetic disorder called mast cell activation disorder, but she found that the symptoms of that condition were highly exacerbated by exposure to plastics. But probably the most shocking example we've heard, and it's a very recent one, there's a couple like this we've heard. This one is from a woman named Veronica Miller, who's in California, and she would like to get her name out there to try and connect with other people who might be experiencing what she's experiencing and to help them and to get help herself. For her, since 2008, she's been suffering from an extremely severe and painful form of what she calls plastic poison. She's seen tons of doctors over the past 5 years, and they have no idea how to explain her condition or even certainly not diagnose or treat it even. When she comes into contact with any type of plastic or a food or drink that's been in a plastic container, her body reacts really swiftly and really violently. She'll get a burning sensation on her lips, on her tongue, or in her throat. If she touches plastic, her hands get red and sting. If she sits on a plastic chair, even with clothes on, it makes her itch and burn. She's had multiple surgeries to repair. When you talked about the nervous system, she's had multiple surgeries to repair severe nerve damage from what seems to be the plastic-caused stress in her body. So she's in a very difficult situation and is really looking to let people know what is happening is possible from exposure to plastic and looking for ways to get beyond that. She has also provided her email if anyone wants to contact her directly, and that is myplasticpoisonlifevm@cox.net, which is cox.net. We can also put that on the blog.
We can put that on the Toxic Free Talk Radio blog. We need to take a break now. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd. I'm here with Jay Sinha. We're talking about life without plastic. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd. And my guest today is Jay Sinha from Life Without Plastic. Jay, let's talk about, is there anything else you wanted to say about Veronica?
Well, just that she's very eager in getting in sort of connecting with other people who might be feeling what she's feeling. So, I won't go too much more into her story goes on and on. There's much, much more than what I mentioned into what as far as what she's been through and the pain she suffers. But that gives you a taste of what her life's like on a day-to-day basis.
Well, certainly, I think that plastics can be associated with all kinds of things, and it may be, I mean, I'm not a doctor, I don't know her at all, but it may be that what she's experiencing was being caused by multiple different chemicals that put her body in this position where she's so sensitive to plastics. And certainly, if people continue to be exposed to toxic chemicals. I have many, many stories myself of people that I've talked to over the years where your body can just get worse and worse and worse to the point where you just have reactions to everything, or end up with cancer, heart disease. Virtually any illness can be associated with toxic chemical exposure. So anything we do to reduce our exposures to plastics help lessen that load on our bodies. So tell us about some of the products that you have. What are your favorite products on your site?
I have a number. One is certainly the airtight containers. They're a great replacement for Tupperware. We use them all the time, and for our son as well, for his lunch. They have clips and a silicone seal, so they are airtight and watertight. I also love a lot of the brushes we have, because brushes are something that's perhaps not as obvious, but most people use a brush for cleaning dishes. There's obviously the toothbrush. We work with a wonderful German company. It's an old family business that makes completely natural brushes from sustainably harvested, primarily beech wood, and then all kinds of different natural bristles, and brushes for anything you can imagine, like for sweeping, for hair, for in the kitchen, for toilet brushes with agave bristles.
I noticed that in 1990, I went to Germany to Earth-Friendly, they have a word for it, I forgot what it was, but they had this awareness much earlier than we did here in America, and so I went to a trade show to see what all these green products were. And one of the things that I saw was whole exhibits with all these wooden brushes laid out.
Exactly.
And I had never seen anything like that before, because there's so many plastic brushes here in America. I'm looking on your page, your body care page, and there's you have wooden toothbrushes, which is something that I love. Now, I want to ask you a question about these. Do these have natural bristles as well?
They do. And the bristles, yeah, it's good to explain those. The bristles are made out of pig hair, and this is an issue for some people. We looked into it quite a bit of detail with the company. The bristles are sourced from a race of long-haired pig, which is only found in China, and the pigs from which they come are used in the meat industry. So they're slaughtered just for the meat, and in the past, the hair, which is used for these bristles, has simply been discarded. So this company was able to source these bristles in this way, and they've tried all kinds of bristles for toothbrushes, and they have found really that these are the only ones that, so far at least, that work well as a toothbrush and maintain some stiffness while also being soft at the same time. So they're able to source these bristles, and they're obviously completely cleaned and sterilized. But they do work well. It's just it can be an issue, for example, for people who are vegan, definitely.
I was just looking at this because many, many years ago, one of the first things that I wanted was a plastic-free toothbrush when I was trying to eliminate plastic. And I looked all over, and I couldn't find any in America. But I happened to go to England. This was in 1987. And I happened to go to England, and it's very easy to get natural bristle, natural handle brushes there because it's part of their tradition. And so I bought a animal bristle toothbrush, and I actually liked it a lot, but I understand the vegan issue. And then there was a time period where there was a company that was making wood-handled brushes, and I think that there was natural bristles, but I don't remember what they were. And then recently, I just found in a local store some natural bristle. So natural, they're made out of bamboo. The handle is bamboo, but they have nylon bristles.
Right.
And I actually read a whole discussion online just the other day because of this, about debating natural bristles, natural animal bristles versus nylon bristles.
Well, Beth Terry has an excellent post on her blog all about that with a lot of the debate in
there.
Oh,
good. I will look on her blog about it. Good.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's go on. Next favorite product.
I really love our ice cube tray. That's that was a really fun product to create as well. It's based on a model that my mother had from the, I guess we'll go back to the 60s, that was originally made out of aluminum. And ours is made out of stainless steel, and it's It's the old style where you have a lever that you pull that actually breaks the cubes.
Mm-hmm. I have one of those.
You do? Okay. Well, they work quite nicely. Break cubes quite cleanly. And
they do. That's what I grew up with, was those metal ones that you pull.
Yeah. Yeah. So we use that a lot. I really love the wooden comb.
I have one of those, too.
Oh, one thing that we really love are some of our new school supplies and office supplies, the tapes, like the paper tape, the cellulose tape. And we just got this amazing glue from Italy. It's a non-toxic glue that smells like marzipan. It is the most, you just want to eat it. And it's certainly completely non-toxic. It's made from potato starch and almonds, and works very well as well. So that's another favorite. Our glass containers are certainly versatile. They have stainless steel lids, and that works well in the fridge, for example. Like with the stainless steel ones, we often write on them, but some people complain that they prefer to see what's in the container, and in that sense, glass works better. Of course, it is more fragile, but the lids being stainless steel works well. Our takeout stuff, we love our sporks. We carry them with us everywhere. It's a little stainless steel spork, which is a spoon and a fork combined that folds. It has a foldable handle, and we carry them like in a pocket, a purse, glove compartment. They're just super handy for avoiding takeout utensils, which are evil.
We need to take another break, but after we come back, I'm going to ask you, well, what are you doing eating takeout anyway in those plastic containers? This is Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dad, and I'm here with Jay Sinha. He's from Life Without Plastic. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dad, and my guest today is Jay Sinha from Life Without Plastic. That's lifewithoutplastic.com. And Jay, I don't mean to put you on the spot about eating out. But, you know, this is something I was thinking about the other day, because I was thinking about, like, going out and even to go to my natural food store. When I'm out, it's really hot here in Florida, and I do carry water with me, but sometimes I want to stop and have like a green tea or iced organic coffee or something like that. And even if I go to my natural food store where they use filtered water and organic coffee and organic green tea, they still put it in a plastic cup.
And I
was thinking, you know what, I just need to bring my water bottle, my glass water bottle, and say, here, put my iced coffee in this bottle.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, and I mean, it's becoming more and more of a norm. The more people that do it, the better, because then the retailers get used to it and it doesn't become like a chore. But we're also great proponents of, you know, eating fresh and eating local as much as possible, which definitely cuts down on the plastic waste.
On the plastics,
the packaging.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. I actually, I make 99% of the food that I eat. I buy it, you know, just as raw ingredients, and I fix it myself. And I used to eat out a lot because I actually enjoy, you know, going to restaurants and trying food prepared by other people. It helps me learn, and it gives me something different and different taste experience. But, you know, I had this experience that I said on another interview where I was buying a lot of ricotta cheese. I was living in San Francisco and buying a lot of ricotta cheese, and I just kept looking at all these plastic cartons piling up, and I decided, you know what, I'm going to buy organic milk in a glass bottle and make my own ricotta cheese, and I did. But it's just a matter of being aware and this vigilance about recognizing where plastic is and then being creative about coming up with a solution.
Yeah, it takes a bit of time and a bit of planning, but if you
and
can incorporate it into
yourself.
Routine, absolutely, absolutely, and changing our habits. But if you can begin to incorporate it into your routine, like a great thing to do. We live in a small community, but at the end of the harvest season, when there's all the amazing vegetables in, you know, July, August, September, is to do some canning and preserve things for the winter. It's really enforce the whole idea of canning, which was the norm.
That used to be the norm, yeah.
Yeah, and so that brings back...
And dehydrating, you can also dehydrate.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yes, I have a dehydrator, and I haven't learned how to can yet. I haven't learned how to, you know, the proper way to put things in the jar and seal it up so that it doesn't get any bacteria or things in it. But I do dehydrate, and but even more importantly, I eat seasonally. I'm not trying to eat tomatoes in the middle of winter. And but I think that canning's great. There's so many things that can be done just in terms of changing our lifestyle about this. So we're almost to the end of the show. Is there anything that you want to make sure that you say? We're not down to the last minute yet. We've got about 5 minutes.
Okay. One thing I really wanted to try and encourage people to do is to educate themselves. I mean, get an idea of if you have to have plastic in your life, which most of us do. You can't really, as we said before, it's almost impossible to eliminate it completely. And it does have its uses. There are uses for it, which are important. But you should to learn about the different plastics that are out there, especially if they're coming into contact with your food and drink, things that are going into your body and becoming you. And there are tons of resources out there. We have lots of information on our site, but, I mean, Beth Terry's blog and book are worlds of information. If you're interested in the marine side of things, there's Five Gyres and the Algalita Marine Research Foundation doing cutting-edge research on plastic pollution in marine environments. The Plastic Pollution Coalition is galvanizing and organizing the whole anti-plastic movement. They have information. The Breast Cancer Fund, Environmental Working Group, Environmental Defense. There's no shortage of information. And from these sources, it's somewhat organized and credible and peer-reviewed as well in most cases. And then I would say just spread the word. Tell your family, your friends about the issue and start taking small actions. Don't try and do it all at once because you'll be overwhelmed. But bits and pieces. Start with reusable bags, getting a stainless steel water bottle. They're easy to find. If you don't want to pay any money, use a mason jar. It's much better than a plastic bottle. And if you want to go a step further, start writing to companies that have tons of plastic, unnecessary plastic packaging, and ask them to change, urge them to change. There's so much that we can do, and we're true believers in lots of small actions adding up to huge paradigmic change.
I totally agree with that. That's what it is. You know, people do get overwhelmed if you say, oh, change everything at once. But people can change one thing. Mm-hmm. And that's why I like to give suggestions about what's the one thing that somebody can do and then what's the next one thing. Because I changed everything in my life one by one. And as we talked about in the quote at the beginning of the show, you know, you start with a seed. You start with an acorn becomes a tree. Egg becomes a bird. And there was one question that I actually wrote down that I didn't end up asking you. And we have a couple minutes. We can answer this.
Oh, great.
What about waterproofing? This seems to be the one area where I haven't been able to find an alternative to plastic. And whether it's a waterproof sheet on a mattress or a plastic layer on a mattress, to keep it clean and dry, or raincoats, or, you know, all those times when you need to keep something dry. Do you have any ideas about what to do with that?
Well, that is a tough one. One thing that is starting to become, I think, more of a go-to fabric for that sort of use could be wool. It absorbs very well. It's obviously not completely impermeable, but it may be a starting point. I know it's used a lot, for example, for diapering more and more, and works beautifully. In terms of something that is like a plastic, I don't have anything specific to suggest right now. I know there are lots of bio-based plastics coming out, but that's a bit of a murky area we still feel, and we're very cautious about getting into it because it's not completely clear what all of the replacements are. And even the plant-based ones, they usually are mixed with other chemicals in order to achieve a real plastic-like quality. But
do you know anything about what those other chemicals are? I wanted to ask you about that, too, about the bio-based plastics, because As I said in the beginning, there's so many different types of plastics. And at one point, I tried to divide them up between the petrochemical plastics and the bio-based plastics. And you could have, like, the same type of plastic. Like, I'm trying to figure out one off the top of my head, and I'm drawing a blank. But the type of plastic could be made from a feedstock of petrochemicals, or it could be made from a feedstock of sugarcane, you know?
Exactly.
But it's still the same type of plastic. And so something could be on a label with that name, and you don't know where it's come from.
Well, exactly. And what you especially have to be careful of are the ones that are what they call oxo-degradable, because they can contain, for example, heavy metals. And they're often marketed more as biodegradable, in that they will break down completely, but they're not breaking down into a non-plastic substance. It still can be a plastic. I mean, those are the ones I would especially watch out for, the oxo-degradable ones. And they, because I know some of them do contain heavy metals, and some of the other additives can be added to the starches to weaken the plastic and cause it to break apart. I don't have specific names on the additives themselves, but they essentially allow the plastic to break apart faster so that they can be broken down by, so that the plant-based part can be broken down by microorganisms. But you still have a plastic element there, so it's not completely being broken down. It's just in a smaller form, which can be taken up by smaller organisms and still go to the food chain.
It's still there. It's not broken. It's broken down into particles. It's not broken down into basic elements, basic molecules.
Exactly, hydrogen and water.
Yeah, exactly. Well, let's end on a pleasant note.
Okay.
Let's see, what positive thing can we say about living without plastic? You know, I like to say over and over again that I find that my life is much more pleasant and pleasurable living with the natural materials than living with toxic chemicals or plastics or anything. Do you find that's true for you too?
Absolutely. I mean, as I mentioned, we live in a rural environment, and we try to live simply, and that sort of lends itself to more and more living without plastic. But, I mean, appreciating the simple things like eating local and eating fresh is a huge one. And it affects your whole life, because as you're doing, when you are creating food from scratch, it takes time, it takes planning, but it's incredibly satisfying and so much healthier.
And so it's much more delicious.
Pardon me?
So much more delicious.
Absolutely. And, I mean, when you know where your food is coming from as well, that's a huge element, which we find goes hand in hand with living without plastic. I mean, the farmers near where we live, we know them, and we know the food they're growing. So that's another added element. We know the food's grown with
and
love.
And I have to interrupt you now because we've come to the end of the show. Thank you so much for being with me.
I've been
talking to Jay Siha from Life Without Plastics, lifewithoutplastics.com, and this is Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lindad.